Welcome, everyone, to another edition of SCRC's Let's Talk Caregiving podcast. I'm your host, Roberto Velasquez, Executive Director of SCRC, and I'm here, as always, with my co-host, Marta Rayon, Director of Public Relations and Government Affairs.
Hi, Roberto.
Hi. Today, we have two special guests. We have Tracy Truscott and Ivan Arias, both social workers who work directly with clients at UC San Diego, Shiley Marcos Alzheimer's Disease Research Center. Welcome.
Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you.
So I'm really excited that you're here joining us because we really want to talk about Alzheimer's disease, and we want to talk about kind of life after Alzheimer's disease. You know, it's very challenging when you're going through as a caregiver and you're not even probably identifying as a caregiver yet. You're going through these emotions as you're seeing your loved one have some more difficulties and more difficulties. Sometimes there's huge denial and you're just trying to excuse, you know, the forgetfulness or the inability to do certain things with possibly old age, or if it's early, it might be something else that might be going on, maybe medications or something. But so there's a lot of denial, and then there's no more denying it.
Well, and I think, too, the idea of Alzheimer's disease, it sounds so daunting. What is Alzheimer's disease? What does it look like? What is it going to look like? How is it going to affect our families? So it's also, I think, the unknown that families are facing. So I'm so glad that you're here to talk to us about what happens next.
Well, yeah, and I'll just share one more. You know, the denial is so strong. We were at a conference just yesterday, and I was talking about the disease and the evaluation and kind of the symptoms of dementia and Alzheimer's being the number one cause of dementia and in the country and around the world. And the gentleman came up to me and said, "Wow, you know, I really didn't want to come here because I did not want to hear this, but I came anyways. And everything you talked about is what my mom is going through. And I didn't want to hear it, but now that I heard it, I'm going to make that doctor's appointment. I'm going to go get her diagnosis because I know that I can't avoid it anymore. And, you know, here I am."
That's good that he realized that.
Yeah. So, Tracy, Yvonne, you know, tell us, you work directly with clients who are caregivers through the research center. So how do you help them? How do you work with them?
Well, we do different things with the families. For example, we have social work consultations where they come in and usually they're very lost when they first get a diagnosis. They don't really know what the next steps are, you know, what to do after getting that diagnosis, what that means, how it's going to change their life. So they do come to us for support in that sense and talk to us, the social workers there. We also offer different support groups for them and quality of life programs, which are programs geared towards engaging the person with dementia and their caregiver in a meaningful way where they can socialize and have a mentally stimulating activity that they can attend.
Exactly. And as a social worker in the research center, I get a lot of calls from families and caregivers who they need a roadmap. They call us and they say, you know, we just got this diagnosis. You're a research center at UCSD. What do we do now? You know, so I usually schedule an appointment for them to come in and meet with us. And then we set up kind of a roadmap because emotionally, they're oftentimes in shock, you know, or disbelief.
Absolutely.
I mean, there are times when people know things are happening, but I would say they're still in shock, even if they think they know something might have been going on for a while, you know.
And I think from the perspective of the caregiver, having someone there to guide you, like you say, set up a roadmap and let you know what might be coming next, that is so helpful.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know when they contact us here at SCRC, many of them are already in a situation where they're just lost and it's crisis almost. And they're wanting somebody to talk to and give them that guidance and coach them through the next step. So when you're working directly with some of these families, what are some of the stories or some of the emotions that they actually talk about?
Grief. You know, sometimes they don't even identify it as grief, but some of the caregivers are more in denial than, you know, the person who has a diagnosis, for example. You know, we got a diagnosis, but my mom's been noticing things for a while, and I didn't think this was happening, you know. So this one daughter and her mother came into the center to have a meeting with me, and her mother was very mild, early stage in the disease process, still driving, still picking up her grandkids, doing a lot of things, but just got a diagnosis of Alzheimer's disease. And the daughter was really pushing her. They had this really great, amazing relationship, but the daughter was kind of pushing her to, let's get your financial affairs in order. Let's do this. Let's do that. She was really like wanting to put things in order, the caregiver. Mm-hmm. And the person with the dementia, just not ready, you know, a lot of emotion going on. So we met and we talked about it, and the daughter got involved in a support group. She came to Southern Caregiver Resource Center.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Referred her to a lot of other support in the community and just slowed the whole process down so that the mother could have a chance to grieve and the daughter could have a chance to grasp and grapple with the fact that, wow, my mom has Alzheimer's disease and I'm letting her drive my kids around and that's going to change. And she does a lot for her. She picks her kids up from school and she's really integrated in the family, you know, and the process. And so a lot of
change.
Yeah. A lot of change. And, you know, your story reminds me of a couple of situations again. Pre-diagnosis. So at least in your situation, they already were dealing with the diagnosis of Alzheimer's. But I know this individual who not too long ago was telling me that he's concerned about his mother, and him and his wife were both telling me they're concerned about his mother. She's starting to have a lot more memory issues. She still lives by herself. They're trying to get her to accept help, but she really doesn't want it. She's still driving.
Oh, wow.
She's already been lost a few times while she was driving. She has all the signs of that you shouldn't be driving, with the dings and the scratches and the forgets where she parks her car and walks around and has to call people for help.
Well, see, and this is why I like how we are able to partner and really support each other's clients, because you do need to look at it from, it's not just the patient or the person with the Alzheimer's disease, but it's also the family and how it's going to affect them, but also understanding. Do you get that a lot from the clients that you see?
Yes, sometimes, but I did have a story, with what Robert was saying earlier about the denial. So I had a man come in, and his wife was the one who was diagnosed. And, by what he was telling me, it sounded like he was the only one in his family who was accepting the diagnosis. So not his wife who was diagnosed, nor his children. So it just made it really difficult for him to really cope with the changes, because others in his family kept saying, no, this is a normal part of aging. And mom's fine. She's just
that's the way
older.
She is.
Exactly.
We've heard that too.
And this is grief. I mean, this is like, this is really trying to cope with the changes over time and acceptance of the changes that are occurring. Your story, Tracy, when you were talking about, you know, trying to get things in order right away because you had the diagnosis. I remember from a personal standpoint, after my father passed away, and while my mom did not have dementia, she had other stuff that we were all being caregivers, for as her kids. But I remember some of my siblings saying, well, we need to get her powers of attorney in order. We need to get her trust changed, and we need to do this, and we need to do that. And my mom was, leave me alone for a while. And we did eventually. She eventually became, you know, we got her trust in order and all and everything that needed to happen. But it took her a while, and it took, you know, it wasn't on our schedule.
Right.
It was on her schedule.
Change is difficult. And I think it's also a challenge for caregivers to accept that change is part of the process, especially when there is so much uncertainty. But it's also with that comes the acceptance, like you said, on your own terms. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's something that I know you build a roadmap and you guide them. What are also some of the things that you help them, when it comes to their emotions, deal with some of that?
Well, you offer support groups. You have support groups, right?
Yeah, we do. Yeah. We have support groups. And that person that I was talking about before, I mean, it's a great ending. I mean, she's still alive. She goes to support groups, but that's exactly what we did. So she came into an early stage Alzheimer's support group, mm-hmm. and her daughter went to a caregiver support group.
Mm-hmm. Oh, good.
And so together, mm-hmm. you know, they started this process of talking to each other several times. They've met with me, you know, as the months went by, and she gave up driving on her own because mm-hmm. she's still, and the daughter was, really happy about that because she's, you know, they partner now. So they're making choices together. They made a choice that she should move out of her house. And so she moved out of her house. She chose the assisted living she was going to live in, but she's now she's still an independent because she's mm-hmm. early stages. Mm-hmm. And she moved closer to the daughter so she could see the grandchildren. So they're only a couple miles away. So the support groups really help for the caregivers. And, you know, they're not alone. So they feel like they can, support each other when they're in a caregiver support group.
Yeah, that's great. I think that's important, that feeling not alone, because you totally become isolated. I know so many family caregivers who tell us how they feel so alone in this, and they're hesitant to tell other people because they're afraid not so much to offend, but they're afraid that their friends are not going to understand, and they're not going to want to be their friends anymore because I don't want to talk to her because all they're going to talk about is their family member and their problems, and I want to deal with that. I don't want to know right. about that, you know.
Right. Yeah. Some of the caregivers in one of our support groups, a whole lot of the caregivers contributed to a list of things that you could tell people in your life about. You know, when they say when they start to ask for help.
Right.
You know, so sometimes they're afraid to ask for help or they don't know what to say. So somebody will say to them, oh, just give me a call if you need anything. Right. So our caregivers put together things that they could hand to people.
Oh, good.
Like,
yes.
Take my person out to the movies. Come and take them for a walk on this particular day at this particular time.
Wonderful.
Because they don't know what to say. They're like, I'm not going to call my neighbor. I'm not going to call my daughter. They're busy. They have things to do.
You know, I hear that all the time in my classes when caregivers say, well, I don't want to ask because I don't want to burden someone. I don't want to inconvenience. And you'd be surprised that people are willing to help if they only knew how. I tell them, you know, you don't know that they might be interested in coming and cleaning your house or picking up groceries for you if you don't talk to them about it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And asking for help is a huge, it might be very difficult, but it's of strength because it is difficult to ask for help, but it's important for the caregiver to take care of themselves before they take care of someone else. Just like, you know, when you're on an airplane and the cabin loses pressure.
That's right.
The flight attendants, what do they say? They say, put on your oxygen mask first and then help someone else. Because how are you going to be able to help someone else when you haven't taken care of yourself?
Yeah.
So that's very important to tell caregivers as well.
Sounds like one of my classes.
Yeah, it sure does.
Exactly.
You know, it's interesting with the list of things to ask and when you challenge families or an individual and you say, what is it that you need? You know, we just had that experience the other day and a caregiver was telling us, she wrote down the top three things. And the first one was, somebody come and stay with my father, my husband, she said, for 30 minutes so I can take a nap. Right. That was the first thing that she wanted. The second thing is, somebody come another day and stay with my husband so I can go grocery shopping by myself. I need to do it by myself. And the third thing was, somebody come and stay with my husband so I can go to a movie. And so it was just
very specific.
Her top three priorities. So yeah, so those lists are great, and training people and getting people to really think about ways that they can help or ask for help and accepting the help.
Right. And you know, after somebody gets a diagnosis, educating themselves is really important about the disease and, you know, what they have to look forward to and the looking at all of these different things. So, which is why we at the research center, we always refer them to Southern Caregiver Resource Center and all the other Alzheimer's, you know, organizations that are out there, just because they need the extra help. They need all the help.
Right.
What does that look like, Tracy, when they are inquiring more about the disease? What does it look like? How do you guide them through that?
So I typically ask them to look at the NIH website, at the Alzheimer's Disease Education and Referral, the ADEER website, because it has so much information. I also have pamphlets and I give them information, but just the idea that they understand that it's a slow process. It's a slow, insidious process. You don't wake up one day with Alzheimer's disease. I mean, this is a slow. Mm-hmm. So they don't have to make these changes immediately. You know, they can take a breath. Nothing's going to happen tomorrow, even though yesterday they didn't have a diagnosis and today they do. It's going to be okay if they just take a deep breath, calm down, and just educate themselves. Go to classes. Go to the Southern Caregiver Resource Center classes or
support
groups. Yeah, support groups, research. I mean, there's a lot. So we kind of put it into
I'm glad
order.
That you do that, because I think – you know, a lot of us are computer savvy, right? We go online and we check the different sites, but it can be very daunting too. Oh, yeah. There's a lot of information. So the fact that you kind of pinpoint it down to them and you say, okay, go to this website and find this information, that makes it easier and not get lost with so much.
And there's classes online, educational programs on what next steps, and it breaks it down into stages also, stage, middle stage, later stage.
So then you have a good overall vision of what it might look like.
Exactly. Right. And you don't get information overload, or if it's too much information to take in, then just focus on the what's happening now
during that stage.
Yeah. Well, I think one of the things that's really important, and you mentioned it earlier, these stories that you're sharing, a lot of emotion involved with a diagnosis, life after the diagnosis as a family caregiver. And we know that people who are caregivers often fall into depression.
Definitely. Anger and depression.
And so, and you're mentioning referrals to Southern Caregiver Resource Center. And so that's absolutely fantastic, because we have a specific counseling program for family caregivers when they are having those very severe symptoms of depression and anger, agitation, and so forth. So we appreciate those referrals.
Oh, definitely.
Because they're very important programs, and those are one of the most powerful programs that we offer, is the counseling program for family caregivers.
And you mentioned depression, but it could be something that they might not have even identified as depression.
Right. Right. Sometimes it's depression. Sometimes it's apathy. Sometimes it's grief. It's just regular grief.
Right.
You know,
well, so. Because you're experiencing loss.
Definitely.
While the person is still alive.
Right.
And so that, exactly. What is that? Ambiguous loss.
Ambiguous loss. Yeah. We've talked about that before. Yes. Yeah.
Well, you know, we could talk about this, gosh, for hours, but we're running out of time. So I want to thank Martha and for co-hosting with me and
my pleasure,
and sharing with all of us all her stories as well, and our special guests Tracy and Yvonne.
Thank you.
Thanks.
You're welcome. And I want to remind our audience that if you're providing support to a loved one, you don't have to do this alone. Asking for help is not a sign of weakness. It's a sign of strength. Just go to our website at scrc.care or call us at 1-800-827-1008. Follow us on Facebook and for more podcasts. And I just want to remind everybody also that SCRC is a nonprofit organization, and we provide our services due to the generosity of our donors and our supporters and partners out there. So if you want to help us, you can always go online to our website and click on the donate and make a donation. It's tax deductible.
And that's scrc.care.
That's absolutely right, scrc.care. Just click on the donate button. So, again, remember, SCRC is here for you.
Caring for those who care for others.
Thank you.